Today, it's Edwin's Monday Evening Property Rant. Hello again, it's Martin North from Digital Finance Analytics. Welcome to all this post covering finance and property news. And it's a Monday, and without fail, Edwin is back for another rant. Hello, Edwin. Very happy new year to you.
And a happy new year to you too, Martin. Happy 2024. As you said earlier on, where did 2023 go? I think many were too busy trying to work out and doing a bit of side hustling just to survive. I wonder what 2024 is going to bring.
Well, I want a refund from 2023. I don't think there were enough days in the year. And, if I look at what has happened more broadly in the economy, I just want a refund.
Well, I just want a recount of from the ballot. Can we go back a couple of years and get a refund on our government? Maybe not. I don't know.
Yeah, I'm not sure that how it works, Edwin, but, you look back over the last year and you think about some of the policy decisions that were and were not made, and then you think about, the broader landscape of the economy, and, that there are unfortunately a number of really quite sad stories are going around. There's this newspaper report that basically said life's a struggle as prices soar, 40%. Are paying debts and are in real strife. That's a big deal. And of course, we've got all of the issues relating to insurance, particularly in those areas where they've had huge amounts of floods and things recently. So there's a few really really sad stories around the place. I hope 2024 will be better, but I think some of the momentum of 2023 will probably swing forward into 2024. To be honest.
I concur with you on that, Martin, and this is why I'm more. And I've had a chat with the team. Obviously, we got together yesterday, and we just had a chat with regards to what we're going to look at in 2024, and we just got to, because I think the pain and Dusty. Also tends to believe there's a lot more money coming in, going to be coming in from abroad, which is going to put a lot of pressure on the locals that are trying to get into the local communities, and that's a sad part, Martin. People in 2024 from the get go, from the onset, are going to realize that they can't possibly live where they want to live. They can't possibly even rent. Where they want to rent, where they would like to, grow their family or bring up their kids or just enjoy the rest of the years of retirement, because in Dusty's opinion, and to an extent in my opinion as well, many parts of Sydney are going to get the market is going to get tougher to enter those areas, those LGAs or suburbs. And all because of this current policy that just allowing more money to come in to own. I mean, look, what the government announced towards the end of last year was absolutely dreadful, and not many people and the mainstream didn't pick up on what the government basically said. They basically, yeah, let go of any policy or any backstop that the locals have to buy into established homes. And basically, all they're going to do is, which we spoke about in the podcast, increase the fines for those that want to buy, the international investors or buyers that want to buy established homes, which is absolutely woeful. Why are we allowing them to buy established homes to be in direct competition with the locals that want to buy these homes for to have a good family environment, to have a good lifestyle. But yet we're in competition with deep pockets from abroad. That's sad. So these are the things that I say we need a refund. As you said, Matt, we need a refund on 2023. We need a refund on from as far back as 2019. And this is why I say politicians should be forced to get a license. That way, the bastards can be sued if they don't meet the promises and if they don't meet budget.
Absolutely. Well, we certainly need a revolution in the way that politics works, because politics isn't working for ordinary people and ordinary businesses in Australia, or indeed many other countries too. And it's as though they are prisoners of maybe the financial system and prisoners of the big developers and big business. And it seems to me that a lot of the decisions that have been taken over the last couple of years are benefiting the big business end of town and, the big financial companies. But really, ordinary people are being left, stranded. But of course, the newspapers continue to talk about, price records, et cetera, et cetera. And I was interested in this particular article because it goes through some of the areas around the place, particularly up in Brisbane, actually, where there have been really significant record prices. But I have to say, when you're talking about 24.8 million and 15.2 million, 11.2 million for price, I mean, these are not prices that ordinary people can ever attain to. So this is a bit of BS as well from the media. And they're really just painting a bit of a picture that is a false picture of what's really going on, in my view.
Yeah, look, the average home now it's reported to in Sydney is reported to be worth $1 million. That's an average home. So that's lumping everything together. Soon we're going to get the high price reports of the areas in the suburbs where the top 10 or top 5 or top 3 suburbs in Sydney, and as you say, it's miles apart where the average Aussie, where the average Aussie butler can afford a place to live. I mean, can afford a place to even rent, let alone live now, let alone buy. The other thing that that we were talking about as in a group meeting yesterday was the size of the blocks of land in the new subdivisions, where now people are paying, like the Ponds, for example, where people are paying $1.5 million to live on 350, 380 square meters of land with a house that was badly built, and within the first year, you're going to potentially end up with major defects, let alone the minor defects that you can't, try to sue the builder if you can. This is the living standards overall. Not to mention all the reports that you get and off the mainstream, and so that are not reported by the mainstream. Off the record. Off the record reports that I get from friends that are still running property management rent rolls, the state of affairs of homes. You got places in the North Shore with one team that was telling us that the landlords live overseas, and they just don't give two rats, Martin. They really just don't give two rats. They're in homes in areas where the entry point just for the block of land is $3.5 million, and people, the tenants that are living in these homes, they've just asked for simple things to be fixed, let alone the major things that are wrong with a dwelling, and in the end just don't care. They really don't care. So this is where we're really heading into very more turbulent waters for 2024. Unfortunately, I like to be a little bit more upbeat with what's coming around the corner, but I just don't see it. That this is what I've been saying to a lot of people, friends and relatives: get out of the city. You just need to get out of the city and think, think a little bit more wider and look, go regional. There's a lot more bang for your buck regional. There's if you really have to commute into the city from many regional areas, you can go into the city. I mean, people are making the commute from Newcastle, from Woi Woi, from Gosford every day of the week just to get away from the city living, and because they can't afford to live in Sydney anymore.
Well, that's right. And, I'm watching quite interestingly the dynamics in the Illawarra, of course, because we had a huge run-up in prices through COVID. Austenmere, for example, price rise by 35% on average in that particular suburb. A lot of demand through COVID from people moving out of the city. Then things turned around and, in fact, prices started to drift back down quite significantly. Up until quite recently, prices were continuing to ease back, but that is beginning to turn around again because once again we are finding that people can't afford to buy closer into the city. So longer commutes from all of those cities, Wollongong, for example, and north of Wollongong in the small suburbs, north of Wollongong. Just, of course, put a lot of travel pressure on people, and it's not as if the infrastructure, the travel infrastructure, is particularly flash, particularly go south from Sydney, right? It takes a long, long time to get down to Wollongong. So, there are lifestyle choices that people are taking, and one of the conversations I quite often have with people in my one-to-one conversations is this trade-off between buying something really, really small and probably not very pleasant closer in, versus buying something further out, which might be on a slightly bigger plot or, maybe a bigger apartment. But with all of the issues around getting around, the travel times and all of those things, because a lot of people's focus is still, for example, in the Sydney base, and it's getting back into the centre of Sydney. And you and I have discussed a number of times how the infrastructure is not really well designed for, regional living and living in the local community. So a lot of it is actually just extended commutes. I mean, these are real, real tough decisions for people to take. And I sometimes think that the whole design of the way that cities and locations are working really aren't designed for people. And then, of course, they come in and say, well, we'll just lift the height limits and we'll just throw up another few high-rise buildings. But of course, again, they're very small, very, very poorly constructed, and a lot of risk there. I mean, these are real, real tough decisions for people trying to work out what to do.
Yeah, and this is where we go back to those conversations around the percentage of high-rise developments that just really don't fit the purpose of use, and it's well and truly there. It's really a toss of the coin. It's a 50-50 split between the apartment, the high-rise developments that are fit for use and those that aren't, and they've got major defects. And sooner than later, they're going to be they've got to put safety first. They're not at the moment. They're still not putting safety first. I don't understand why. There's obviously, well, you can sort of understand why, but the pressures of the lack of accommodation, the lack of residential properties for lease or even to buy. It's what's compelling and stopping the state governments and local governments from taking greater action. But look, Martin, it's soon we're going to have major catastrophes on our on our books, on the politicians' conscience, hopefully, because we haven't learned from previous issues, and we've gotten away from major disasters like your Opals, your Mascots, your apartments that burnt in back in the 2013, 20 between 2013 and 2015 in Bankstown, where there was over there was over accommodation in those in those areas, and people start resorting to cheaper means to cook, which we I spoke about the portable gas stoves, the issues around it. It is we're going to get it's going to get more and more disastrous. That's the unfortunate side of things. And yet the governments are also telling, or the trumpeters for the government are now starting to write stories as to, oh, look, it's safe now to go back and live into, you know, in high-rise developments or in apartments because we're building better, which is a lot of rot. A story isn't going to change the way that a developer or a builder functions, because they're interested in the bottom line. They're interested in the savings. They're interested in the profit. They're not necessarily interested in ongoing safety issues or issues that are hazardous to the residents. Most don't give two rats, like I've been saying for many, many years. There's only a handful of developers that can build high-rise developments, and anybody below that, you're basically playing the roulette wheel when you're buying into a high rise. This is where we're headed. It's not looking pretty, but yeah, people really have to act now. They really have to. Many people have been sitting on the sidelines, in terms of making those decisions. They have to start really making those choices, and unfortunately for many, it's that journey back to the region. But again, this is what you and I spoke about at the beginning of 2023. I said that back then. I said that although the tides come back into the Sydney city region, it's when things are going to become tighter, when things are going to become more expensive, that swell will head back to the regions, and that's what we're going to see a lot of that in 2024. And more importantly, what's caused that is obviously the immigration policy of the current government.
Yes, well, the immigration policy is shot to pieces, as we've been talking about for some time, and of course now some of the more mainstream media has also been talking about it. The answer is to reduce students, but as we said the other day, students don't necessarily form the core problem. There are many people coming in that are quite cashed up. There's another interesting observation, and that is that if you think about people who've bought property, the costs of maintaining the property and the costs of living in the property are also rising. And one of the things that I noticed in this particular article here is that a lot of people are not paying the rates that they should. So some of the, and this is Brisbane actually, some Brisbane suburbs racking up huge unpaid bills with unpaid rate bills. So this is another factor that's worth thinking about. Now, you can ask, well, why is it that people actually are unable to pay their rates? Well, part of course, is they just don't have the money to do it. So, and of course, rates are actually somewhat connected with the value of property. So as property goes up, the value of rates goes up. So the economics of owning a property is another factor in the mix here. And one of the things that I find quite often see when I chat with people is that they don't do the math, not just on day one, but later as well. So when you think about owning a property, you've got to think about the repairs and the maintenance and the rates and the power and the gas and everything else. And what I'm quite shocked about is quite often people jump into property, extend their budget to the max to be able to get something, but then actually find it really difficult to maintain the property and keep it up together and just to pay the rates and things like that once they've got it. So there's another factor in the mix here with high inflation that I think people sometimes haven't really sort of fully adjusted to.
Yeah, well, one of the other things, Martin, is that I bang on about on a lot of my social media posts and when we discuss our rents, is the fact that people become buyers stupidly, ignorantly, and willfully. Is there such a word as willfully? I don't think so. Willfully.
Well, you just made it up. That's fine. It's a new year. Make up a new word.
24, Martin, that's it. We've coined 2024, the year of opportunities. That's it. I was looking to see what I was going to put on my Twitter header, 2024, the year of opportunities. But you got to take action, right? You got to do it. You don't just think about it, talk about it, post about it, do it. So What they do is as we were saying, the economics of buying into a property, a lot, Martin, have gone crazily into going toe to toe with, as I say, the Wechat chatterers in some areas, the silent tigers, and you know, the new kids on the block, or developers, or other people that simply just want to, they just want in. They've had enough of the waiting. They just want in, and they go for those glossy showroom renovated properties without any due diligence. Now, I've been banging on since the early 2000s, the importance of buying a property, taking into account the future required costs, in areas that you're not aware of, such as your subfloor areas, your roof voids, any issues with retention walls. That's at your cost. So, and once you own the property, that's it. That is no longer the responsibility of the previous buyer. Hence the reason why we've got caveat emptor to an extent. Now, if the building inspector, building and pest inspector colluded, which in my view they do collude with the agents and the vendors. But that's if you're going to rely on the real estate agents before you buy building and pest report. Well, you're going to have all sorts of issues that are not reported. I've seen these guys from before you buy. I've seen these guys go into properties. I've witnessed them with my own eyes go into properties, spend no more than 15, 20 minutes at best. Walk in and walk out and provide a full comprehensive report as to the state of and the condition of the property. Now, of course, that report benefits the seller, benefits the vendor, benefits the agent, because the property can be sold quicker. The property can be nothing to see here, folks. It looks good on paper, so it's fooling the buyer. And this is the unfortunate thing. So these are one of the other reasons why people then can't afford these other basic costs of owning a property, no different to owning into a strata lot, paying the strata levies, is the fact that they just didn't do the due diligence walking in. They went in blindly, willfully blind. Or ignorantly, but it's something that the government needs to really step in and take account for as well, because the selling agents are abusing that generous, generous in bracket inverted commas, because they made it this way because to expedite the sale, and it looks like they're doing the buyers a favor. In actual fact, they're not, but buyers fall for it. So when you talk about looking at the council rates, look, there were reports throughout this year of how certain councils and councillors gave themselves a huge pay rise. And we've got to pay for them. We've got to pay for their overseas trips. We've got to pay for their educational trips into the how brothels affect the landscape of their suburbs. So they've got to go to some country to explore that for themselves to see if it's true. I guess one of these things, the ridiculous things that we've been paying for, and that increases. Increases the cost. I mean, in the mountains, again, we've been banging on with the Katoomba Council because they don't want to take charge of the cleanup of the overgrowth to two of the boundaries of our property, because they're saying it's not their job, it's the RFS, and they're saying, no, it's not our job, it's the council. So we've just been going backwards and forwards. Now, in the meantime, as you say, Martin, earlier on, the rates have gone up, Insurance has obviously got went up, but not by a lot. But we're documenting everything. Dusty and I are documenting everything. We every conversation we have with the council, we're documenting it. We are putting it out on record, putting it on there, making sure that the people that attend to our calls document it on their end as well. Because should anything happen, we've got claims against the different parties for not acting. But the unfortunate thing, Martin, is not a lot of people know these things. Like when they buy into strata lots, when they buy into properties, into new subdivisions, and you've got selling agents promising, making promissory advertising campaigns that everything's hunky dory, everything's great. The property values don't. The value of this property will never go down. It will only go up. The demand is high. They're making all these financial assertions without an AFSL, and people believe it because they see that the selling agent is the professional. But if you take contemporaneous notes, if you keep the marketing material, if you have a comeback, you've got a strong comeback, first and foremost against the agent, because you're not going to be able to follow chase the builder, you're not going to be able to chase the developer. Because they're at arm's length away, and the person that got you into that deal is the selling agent. So all these contemporaneous notes will fall in your favor. And then when you start taking these agents, selling agents to the tribunals, you will get ahead. So, but that's the unfortunate thing. We don't really learn. At school, in our earlier years, we don't learn how to be parents. We don't learn how to be property buyers. We don't learn enough about how to take care of our financial positions. After we leave school, we learn other bullshit subjects on how to tiptoe through the tulips without upsetting your neighbour. And how to get into how memorize 1,001 different pronouns or something or other and so forth. I mean, this is, but yet the fundamental aspects of life, where it's really going to count in everybody's future, is something that the education system has really forgotten about, and we've just gone absolutely gone one-sided. But of course, and it favours the ruling class, right? It favours the politicians, because over the decades, all that's been happening is the society has just become dumber, unfortunately, financially dumber. To the point that we're relying on in this arena of buying, selling, and renting, we're relying on a so-called professional to tell you that what's coming out of his or her mouth is 100% gospel, and you need to listen to it, and you need to pay more, or you need to pay more in rent, or you need to pay more in the purchase price because you're getting a great deal. That's where it is, Martin. So yeah, it's a crazy world.
Well, I think your point about the required education for life versus the education that's actually provided is, there's a big gap between that. And certainly I find that when I chat with people about their idea of how financial things work, and how decisions are made, it's a long way off where it needs to be. And even a lot of people don't really understand what APR, annual percentage rates, are, in terms of relative comparisons of different types of interest rates and those sorts of things. So it really does beg the question about how to provide the right platform of education, and it should be around finance, personal finance, and cash flow management and those things. And it should be around, you know, property ownership and those sorts of things. I mean, these are critical life skills that people need. And unfortunately, quite often, they actually really don't get a chance to learn those until they actually get thrown in at the deep end. And then, of course, you're competing with, you know, building people who do it all the time. And, you know, if you're buying a property at an auction, you know, you're competing with builders who are there and people who've been in the game for a long, long time. So I think there's a really important question about the base educational level and particularly about competence. And also about the other fact is that we've moved into a financialized society where everything is about investing and finance and those sorts of things. And, you know, there's a lot of spruiking out there, whether it's some Bitcoin or property or gold or whatever it is, right? Now, again, what we find often is that it's half-truths being told. It's not the full story. But people get caught out because they don't know enough to be able to do the questioning. So, you know, I'm a bit of a skeptic here. I say question everything. Get to understand it yourself rather than actually rely on other people. And unfortunately, the key point is the intersection between what we're talking about and property is it's true. Most people are over-reliant on what real estate agents are saying about the property. Most people don't do sufficient due diligence themselves when they're thinking about purchasing a property to really understand what they're really buying. And they sort of muddle along through and then, you know, often repent at their leisure. So there's a real, real important job. And this is one of the reasons why this show is so important, Edwin, isn't it? Because what we're trying to do is to throw a bit of a spanner in the works so that people actually ask the right questions and therefore end up with property that's actually better property that's going to be more sustainable for them. And, you know, unfortunately, many people don't actually make the right decision with regard to property at the moment.
No, and look, I'm going to blow my trumpet now, man.
Go for it.
So yeah, many people think that, you know, and they believe the shit that selling agents sell them, right? And they fall for it, hook, line, and sinker. But one of my trophies for 2023 was, that I could boast about when the things that happened in 2023 was actually buying a property for a selling agent, a well-known selling agent, in the Blacktown LGA. So because I bought off him prior to at the beginning of 2023 for another client, he was somewhat bamboozled how we got the deal, and we got it, 150 grand cheaper at that time than what, you know, the original guide was, because of, I raised certain issues and I made certain, the owner had made certain assertions and he believed the owner and so forth. And I countered that, with our own research and we did, it turned around and we got the property. Now, subsequently to that, I keep in touch with selling agents, obviously, from looking in various regions. And towards the end of the year, he also keeps track of other agents' properties in the area. And he gave me a call and said, "Mate, I believe you bought such and such for one of your clients of our competitor." And I said, "Yeah, as a matter of fact, I did." And he said, "Oh, can I ask you what you bought it for?" And I told him the price. And he said, "Shit, if you went to auction, you would have got at least $150, $170 more than what, $70,000 more than what you paid." And I said, "I know that." And he goes, can we have a coffee?" So we sat down, had a coffee, and he goes, "Can you find me a property? My partner and myself, we want to get into the market, and can you buy us a property?" And I was able to buy a property in the LGA that he works in, and that was at the beginning of December. So this is, as you said, Mark, we're going into a financialized lifestyle, and that's put a lot of pressure in a lot of families. And that, and the unfortunate thing is, look, whether you like it or not, many people, the people that are selling are using professionals. You need people. If you don't like me, well, you don't like me. You know, you're never going to like me. But yeah, we get the job done because we know what the opposition does also, and whether you like what I say, whether you like what I say on the podcast, or whether you don't like what I say on the podcast, or whether you people don't like what I put on what I put on the social media posts, whether they like it or don't like it, that's got nothing to do with it. There's so much going on where there's so much smoke and mirrors in the financial industry, and I'm sure in the other sectors as well. So much smoke and mirrors that people need professionals in order to stand on their behalf, because particularly with property, it is very, very, very adversarial. Now, at the same time, a lot of past clients have been calling me that have decided to sell their investment properties or their principal places of residence. And although we don't take carriage of the sale, but we do take management of the process to assist them to achieve a better price at the end of the day, to achieve a better marketing, to get a better marketing campaign, and squeeze the selling agents for every bit that we can, without compromising the standard of delivery and achieving a higher price. But that's because we're in such a competitive market, and then when you've got people from which we spoke about earlier on, when you got a lot of money coming in from overseas, from abroad, adding more issues, adding more competition, conflict, whatever you want to call it, into that mix, it does become very daunting. Hence the reason, sometimes I sort of think, well, I don't blame people just for getting emotional, because they've just had enough of it, and they just think, I've got to have it. They're losing their minds. They've been in the market or looking for property for a year or 2 years or whatever, however long, and they're being priced out, or something's happened along the way. But it's hard, and this is why I say that what the governments have done, we've spoken about at length before, is we were the first to call from back in ScoMo and Co Real Estate Group. We called the fact that the first time buyers were the fodder. They were the sacrificial lambs, and then Albo and Partners Real Estate took over the reins, and they've been continuing to sacrifice not only the first time buyers, but also those that have had substantial deposits, or they thought they had substantial deposits, but for the immigration policies and the supercharge, the rocket they put up in property prices at the beginning of 23, right through to the end. And it doesn't, at this point, at this very point, when you compare numbers, 22, 23, and now the first week of 24, things aren't looking too pretty for buyers in the market. I hope things change. I really do hope things change. I hope things change for because of our buyers as well, because of our clients. I hope things change because I've got family members that are wanting to get into the market. My daughter's now wanting to get into the market. I hope things change for family friends as well that are looking at getting into the market, for nephews and nieces. But so far, and looking at the geopolitical greater arena, things are going to be tight in 2024 so far.
Yeah, and let's just quickly touch on the numbers. We won't do a full numbers sort of spread, but just to, in terms of this is the trend, right? So you know, here we are at the beginning of 2024, and the listings are significantly lower compared with last year, and we've been seeing that trend for some time. And if we then just quickly skip through, you can see there that the Sydney region, as at the first, is 12,844, which is, well, to say low, I mean, it's extremely low. Interestingly, in Melbourne, the numbers are higher, and there's a lot of houses that are listing. I think the Sydney and Melbourne dynamics are actually quite interesting. They seem to me to be pulling in quite different directions, Edwin. Now, I'm not sure whether that means that what we're going to see is Sydney catching up with Melbourne, and so listings rise, or whether, in fact, Melbourne and Sydney have actually fundamentally diverged now.
I think they're fundamentally diverse. We also look at the comparisons between land sales. I mean, land sales in Melbourne are closer to 4,000 now. Blocks of land in comparison to, I think it's about 1,100 or something or just over 1,000 in Sydney. There's obviously, we spoke about the exodus of investors. We called that from when they were trying, when the Victorian government were changing the policies. We spoke about that when the even before minimum standards for rental properties were to kick in. One of the things is that in the greater exodus of investors, in my view, is because it is very they've got better regulations than what we have here in New South Wales. But what that's done is that's driven a lot of the investors out of that market, because they really haven't fine tuned those regulations in order to make it still maintain attractive for investors to come in without compromising the lifestyles of the tenants as well. But when you lean one way, you're going to quickly find out. We spoke about what happened with those regulations in New Zealand and back then, and then we said it was only going to follow suit in Victoria, and it did. Then the WeChat chatterers were out because it seems that Victoria is not really doesn't really cater for the budget accommodation type of rental. Rental schemes that they have here, and also it's very hard for the Sydney investors. Most of the investors in Victoria are from Sydney, and we can't control that from a distance. Obviously, then the sites have come back to Sydney, and again, our discussions with the group yesterday. With the Chinese contingency, with Dusty and Evan and that, as I call them, what they're getting from their WeChat groups is a stronger appetite to buy into further out west, northwest, west, and southwest parts of Sydney from investment purposes, because they can see the greater demand in because of the rental. So low rental vacancy, and people will move into that budget accommodation in order to avoid sleeping in a car, avoid sleeping in a tent, or sleeping in a caravan. So these are fundamentally we've really got two different markets, two contrasting markets, Martin. It's in my view, they're going to act totally different. But the mainstream will just paint it all with one brush and say all sorts of things.
Yeah, well, you and I have been talking about this problem of averaging out and talking as macro pictures. You've got to go granular as you and I say, and I do think there are some fundamental differences now between the Melbourne and Sydney markets, and I see that in my one-to-one conversations, and I still see more property investors exiting out of Melbourne because the net yields are now worse than they've been for a long, long time. I see more demand for property in and around the Sydney region, particularly from those overseas people coming in and looking to you know, grab investment properties. I see a lot of interest up in Queensland, because Queensland has performed quite well. Prices are a little bit lower relative to some other parts of the country. But I also see massive amounts of distress there when, in fact, property doesn't go the way as expected. Tasmanian property prices seem to me to be drifting quite a lot lower. I think that'll continue because we had a significant boom over the last time, which was unsustainable. I think property in Adelaide is holding value relatively well at the moment because there's a lot of demand interstate for investment property there. And I think that over in the West, property prices in Perth are actually overall rising quite fast, but not universally. And if you separate out units and houses, and if you then separate out different geographies over in the West, closer into Perth, a lot of momentum to the upside at the moment. The supply is very limited, the demand's quite strong. But if you look further out than that, it's a very different story. A lot of the relatively newly constructed and poorly constructed property north and south of Perth, different story with significant stress there and prices going in different directions. So what I'm trying to just paint here is you've got to look granularly. You've got to go and look at the detail in the local areas, because different areas are behaving very differently. We've also said before that units and houses are performing very differently. I think generally standalone properties are supporting prices better at the moment. That may change. I'm also seeing some weakness now at the top end, so that might well, with, you know, work its way down over the next little while. So, it, all to play for. So, you know, as we come into the sort of the 2024 domain, Edwin, what are your top three predictions for what we're going to see through this year relating to finance and property, or indeed more broadly?
From Sydney, looking at Sydney market, the top three would have to be the numbers are going to either be on par with what we saw in 2023, or they may even track lower because of the overseas tensions abroad, and because things, you know, wars and rumors of wars will only, in my opinion, are only going to continue to escalate. And the, as I say, the turtle is going to, you know, slowly turn into a clam. And, you know, that would be the, because the people that were selling homes, the people that were putting their homes on the market, or in a lot of desirable areas, in a lot of areas, and also your older style units, where, you know, were your traditional, you know, your traditional sellers. So I think they'll stay put. So numbers are going to be tracking low, which then comes to number two, which if, you know, should that be the case, then the obvious is going to be we're going to get a jump, in my opinion, between 5% and 10% in prices across Sydney. This is broadly speaking. Different suburbs will perform way differently. I know where the demand is for the, you know, for the charterers and the in the surge in demand for the Silent Tigers as well. So it's, you know, we're just seeing some phenomenal prices being paid for homes. There's going to be a lot more said about building industry having greater issues, which then again puts more pressure on the on new builds. There'll be a lot less, but then again, we spoke about HIA talking about that there will be a lot less new builds happening in 2024 than what we even saw in 2023. The 2023 numbers, according to the internal sources from Bob the Builder, you know, they're tracking closer to 130,000, which is 30,000 less than the 160, 165,000 that is being spoken about. And, you know, so we're not really going to know what the truth is. And if we're going to be building less or completing less in 2024, well, there's your answer. There's less choice. And if you can't, if you, you know, So that's three, right? So that's my top three. So
No, very good. And let me add to, I'll add my top three as well. I think we are going to see more distressed sales, particularly in some of those high stress suburbs, particularly from those people who bought when interest rates were ultra low, when home builder was being propagated, when politicians were saying, pile in, pile in, go buy property. A lot of those people are now getting to the end of their tether. And I don't think that we're going to see interest rates coming down fast enough to be able to save them. The banks have been extending and pretending for many households, and allowing them to extend the life of the mortgage or go interest only or forgive payments for a period of time. But I think we are going to see more distressed sales. When I say distressed sales, I don't mean the bank foreclosing. I mean the households will come to the conclusion that they have to get out. So I think that's going to be one of the interesting dynamics. The second one is, are we going to see a lot more about the, particularly in the papers and the politicians talking about, people just have to accept that we're going to have to build more high rise, and that means that we're going to go up, and that means that the quality of your neighborhood's going to change. You've got to live with it. And there's no good saying not in my backyard. It's got to be in your backyard because that's just the way it's got to be. So I think we're going to see quite a lot of politicians in particular pushing this story that you just sort of allow people to build up, more granny flats, higher density. So the higher density story will be a big one, I think. The third one, I think, is the failure in the building and construction sector will continue. I'm certainly seeing in my surveys a lot of pressure from a cash flow perspective. And I made a show just before Christmas going through the numbers in detail, just showing how the building and construction sector has really fragmented. But I also think we will see quite a lot of phoenixing. What I mean by that is that a building and construction company disappears, and then almost the next day, that same company comes back in a different form, exits all its liabilities and starts again. So we're going to see a lot of phoenixing. So a lot of suspicion should be actually directed at some of those building construction firms, particularly the new fly-by-nights. And so if you are going to be engaging with any building and construction entities, particularly to do with home allowance packages or major conversions, do your due diligence because you've got to be very careful you're not actually contracting with an entity that could disappear. So those are my three. It's going to be a really tricky year. But there was another question which came up. We did a live show on Christmas Day and we got through some of the questions, but we didn't get through all of the questions. And we covered, I think, first-time buyers, service charges on owners' corporations, defects, underquoting, granny flats. This was a really interesting question, and it was this one, Edwin. Edwin has spoken about the role of the property portals. Given the current low volumes of sales, is this playing into the portals, into the hands of the portals? So maybe we could just close out tonight's show with your latest thoughts with regard to the future of the property portals versus the real estate industry overall, and whether, in fact, the power is swinging more and more to the portals. What do you think?
Well, sooner than later, and it's going to be sooner. I thought that would I believed last year that we're going to get a little bit more announcements on what they're doing, but I'm still convinced that that domain in real estate will be launching a greater uptake of what the role is, and they will become real estate agencies in their own right. That's my belief, and I hang my hat on the inside information I got years ago with regards to the an ex-CEO, one of the groups, and what he had put together, and that is the fact that the real estate industry, are making over $15 billion in revenue by way of commissions from vendors across Australia, The portals are making, to the tune of, around about, 4.5 to 5, call it four billion. So when there's less properties on market, there's obviously going to be less revenue that they're going to make, because there's less properties that get advertised, and less money is spent. So that's got to be hurting, and it has been hurting them for the last few years. They've been hurting, from started to hurt about 2019, and then we went into the pandemic. Obviously, that's when the listing numbers really tracked down. So that's a big revenue source. We know that they're very strong, that they're very active with the way that they're working around introducing inquiry into the financial arena. So real estate is really the only obvious choice. When I say real estate, conducting or acting as a real estate agency to take carriage of the entire sale, because in essence, what they're saying to themselves is, look, whenever somebody wants to buy a property, they come to the portals to search for a property to buy. You don't drive around, you don't pick up a newspaper anymore, you don't drive around looking for sale signs around the neighborhoods, right? Because buyers are from all over the world. So you look at the portals. When you go to sell your property, well, that's where you hang your advertising on as well, because that's the main point of reference that any buyer wants to look through. So they're thinking to themselves, the agents, the selling agents, don't really do much other than stand at the front door and open for inspection, and and take people's names down and then harass them, or appoint an auctioneer, which they're not auctioning themselves. They appoint an auctioneer, which is an added cost to the vendor, which we can do all those things. They can do all those things by getting selling agents, licensed agents, to operate for them as contractors, similar to, as I call it, similar to your Purple Bricks 2.2, except more on a fee for service type of scenario, as opposed to what Purple Bricks try to do with a fixed price offering. And so that is where they, I've been talking about it. I know certain things have happened in 2023 in those two arenas, in REA and in Domain. I thought they would be going out a little bit quicker, but I really can't see a different pathway for them if they want to make more revenue, if they want to increase their revenue, or rather decrease their revenues from, let's say, from the 4 million, decreasing to 2.5 or 2.7 billion, the way things are going, because there's less advertising happening on the portals. So I am a believer that in a way it would be a good thing to have a fee-for-service model, which you and I spoke about, Martin, in previous show, try to compare and contrast the pros and cons of having a commission-based model as opposed to a fee-for-service. I mean, lawyers are on a fee-for-service. They charge you for what they, for the increments of 6 minutes, for what they spend on your case, not for educating yourself, or not for educating themselves about you. They're supposed to know. And likewise, that should be the same case for real estate agents as well. But we are where we are because of the lobby groups that are behind, that drive the commission based model, that doesn't really help the vendor, and doesn't really help the purchasers. So that's my stance hasn't changed, I would like to think that we're a lot closer to that. To their model, and if they don't bring it out, maybe I have to bring that model out, Martin, and put it out there and disrupt the industry. What do you reckon?
Well, I do think the industry is ripe for disruption. I do think the portals have huge power, and if you think about what most real estate agents actually do, you know, as you say, they turn up on the day and show people around and take their names and then do a little bit of haggling in the background. But really, you know, is the quality of the interaction between a vendor and agent worth what the agent is getting paid in terms of commission? Well, you and I both believe that they're probably earning way more than they probably should for what they do. And therefore, the industry is ripe for disruption. So I wonder whether 2024 will in fact be the year of disruption. We know that the portals are continuing to wrestle with lower revenues because, as you say, there's less listings. So they're going to be looking for other revenue sources. And from a vendor perspective, you know, the digital adoption that we've now got, the fact that most people are very comfortable using online portals to look for property, and, you know, unfortunately, in some cases, people don't even go and inspect the property in real life, which is a real problem in my view. Hope we don't go down that path too far, unless you know the property in the area really well, because you can actually miss a lot. I think it puts back into perspective what I said earlier on. In that context, you know, whatever the portals are doing and whatever the information flows are, you still have to do the due diligence yourself when you're thinking about buying a property. And you can't just outsource that to a property portal or to anybody else. You've actually got to make sure that you have the right professional advice around the purchase one way or the other. And that's everything from surveys and, you know, other things too. So whilst there might be some disruption from the property portals over this year, there's still a critical question about the due diligence process around property purchase, and that hasn't gone away, and probably because of what's going on, it's ever more critical.
Definitely, and this is going back to the beginning of the show, and this is why properties are costing purchasers a hell of a lot more, and when we really started to hit this nail on the head in early days of the pandemic of 2020, where we said, be careful, because this is going to be a greater opportunity. We said then that underquoting was going to rise. There's just a certain, you know, way and trends that the market, the industry was going to go into. I won't go into details why I believe that, but I could see it. We certainly saw the rise of underquoting throughout the pandemic and going into 22 and 23, and then I said this is more the less property on market, more competition. Prices were surging all over the place, and people were just buying on a whim, or you know, more to the point, or on the tick of approval from the greatest opponent, which is the selling agent. Martin walking into a ring with Mike Tyson, and Mike Tyson says to you, listen, Martin, this is going to go okay, it's going to be all right, just stand there, just don't move. I'm not going to hit you hard. Trust me, I'm not going to hit you hard. You know, just put your hands down and booyah. That's what people are doing.
My analogy is you hand over your wallet, open it up and say, help yourself.
Yeah, or the old, you hand over your checkbook. Yeah, you hand over your pass. You hand over your password to your crypto wallet, or you hand over your password to your bank account.
Absolutely. Yeah, it's crazy, isn't it? Edwin, I want to say thank you very much for the first show of 2024. I shall chat back on those predictions at the end of the year, of course. We'll be doing our weekly shows as normal. And folks, if you've got specific questions for Edwin you'd like us to discuss, just throw them in the chat and we'll try and incorporate them in our shows ahead. I've still got a few questions from the end of last year, which we'll get to in future shows. But have a good 2024, Edwin. I hope that everything goes well with you and yours, and that when we connect next week, we'll definitely have more to say, because guess what? The markets are waking after the Christmas and New Year holiday.
Definitely, and all the very best to our followers and viewers And yeah, it's going to be an interesting 2024, and we'll certainly bring out and highlight some of the changes, proposed changes, or what the whisperers, what the chatterers, what the silent tigers and the new kids on the block are saying, to keep our audience ahead of the curve.
Absolutely. And happy new year to all our viewers and followers and supporters. Thank you very much for all your comments and questions, and we'll look forward to serving you more through 2024. This is Martin North from Digital Finance Analytics signing off. See you, Edwin. Bye-bye.